Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to The Naturalist Capitalist. I hope you're all doing well on this, I think it's Wednesday afternoon. I'm coming to you on the road from Roswell, New Mexico. So if I disappear halfway through the stream, you guys probably know what happened. It's just, you know, I might be in a better place. It depends on where the aliens take me. We'll see. But I've got Ryan Hoag on the show, who I just came across about a week ago. I was on his YouTube channel, and he's got a lot of interesting stuff out there. How you doing, Ryan?
Hey, what's up, Reed, man? I hope that the aliens don't abduct you and drop you off on like Epstein Island or something.
Yeah, we'll hope I end up at least on Mars or something. You know, even though I'll die, that'll be better right than Epstein Island. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us about Ryan's method, passive income, how you got started. What is it you do?
Sure. Yeah. That's what I do for a living now. I used to be a web developer 9 to 5, and then ended up joining YouTube, kind of like you, except I had a couple years head start. And just talking about like e-commerce as a web developer, you know, you spend a lot of time at a computer. It was good money, but I realized, you know what, if you learn to like sell things and kind of automate fulfillment, like Amazon, stuff like that, you can make money while you sleep and work my way out of a job. And you know, what's funny is it's like ever since the whole COVID thing, I've spent so much of the time that I freed up from not having to work just kind of like going down these rabbit holes, man, of trying to figure out what's going on in the world, you know, stuff that I didn't used to care at all. You know, now I'm just like obsessed.
Yeah. I mean, that's a typical trend with a lot of people with what's happened over the last year. I mean, a lot of people who didn't care about any of this type of stuff are just immersed in it now because we had to care suddenly, you know, like even if you're someone who doesn't know what's going on, you still care and you want to find out what's going on. But you've done a lot of deep dives. You've been way into the ulterior motives that are being, you know, exploited throughout this whole pandemic. Why don't you just kind of lay out for us what you see happening as the COVID regime has taken over, you know, as we've had massive government bailouts to certain businesses and everything. What do you think is shaping up throughout all of this?
Yeah, you know, the timing of COVID, and you know, when I say COVID, it's like I'm thinking something different than a lot of my friends and family think. Like, you're probably on the same boat. When I think of COVID, I think response to COVID. Right. You know what I mean? Because if you just look at COVID on paper and you don't have somebody reading a teleprompter interpreting the data for you to basically be like COVID bad, but you're just like, oh, here's the statistics, COVID not bad, you know, then it's like a completely different story. But you're like, but COVID's still bad because government response to COVID bad, but COVID itself, not really that deadly on paper, right? Statistically speaking, right? So I always just like to kind of clarify that because it's like, it's almost absurd when you see that. I think if you're under the age of 65, you're more likely to die from influenza. But then the deeper you dive into that, you're actually not more likely to die from influenza because they lump influenza and pneumonia numbers together to increase the fear of influenza death to increase the intakes of shots. The whole thing is absurd, man. Like, the more, like I said, the deeper you go, the more you start to uncover how they're gaming the system. They're, like I say, they lie with numbers. What's Bill Gates' self-proclaimed favorite book? It was like How to Lie with Statistics, right? No coincidences. As far as like answering your question of like where is this headed, you know, we're all guessing, right? It would be crazy if it was really as telegraphed as the Great Reset, if that really is the end goal. And at the same time too, wouldn't you agree, it would make a lot of sense that, you know, essentially it's the ultimate few control the many answer, right? Like, I'm sure you've heard of like, you'll own nothing and be happy and all that. What are your thoughts there on, do you think that's like feasible or technically feasible? That's kind of like the perspective that I think I can speak to more is, I think I kind of understand the technical feasibility of that happening.
It does seem that everything that has been happening has just been the upward transfer of wealth and has been propagandized through fear so that the people accept it, you know, because if you had to do it without the people's acceptance, you'd have a lot of resistance. So if you can convince them that everything that's being done is protective or it's for the benefit of the many, then they're not really going to resist it. I mean, when it was beautiful that giant stimulus bill they passed right before Christmas, you know, the lion's share of the money was going to corporations and foreign governments, and people were getting like $600. You know, so it was a joke. But if you stood in the way of that, or if you said we shouldn't do this, you were demonized as the enemy, you were evil. So, I mean, they've already won the culture war, you know, they've already won the
they mind control the narrative, right? And that's that's what's most important, because somehow the populace is willing to not, I don't even know what to say, like just not think for themselves, right? They turn on the TV and it's like, what should I be thinking about and how should I feel about that topic?
Yeah.
No questions asked. And do you ever wonder how we got here too, man? Like I wonder, like, did we just wake up here one day? Is this the result of like generations of psychological operations and manipulating things? Like, I always think like at scale too, you know, because it does seem like, you know, not to be negative, but some percentage of it might be like 50-50 of like people that are just asleep at the wheel and people that say, wait a second, this is odd, you know, and even just begin to critical think about something like the vaccine drive, right? Like this push for, because it doesn't have to be vaccines. Imagine if it was just to eat vanilla ice cream, like it would still be absurd, you know? And to me, it's like equally absurd if you actually look at what the, you know, vaccine that doesn't fit the definition of vaccine to more like a medical device, but it's like what it's actually ever been shown to do versus what people think it does just due to sheer propaganda, nothing based in clinical trial data or science or anything like that.
I don't think it's new. You know, we've always been that way. You know, you can go back to the Salem witch trials and look at fear and how it just grips people. And, you know, World War One, there was propaganda back then. It's just it's how they can streamline it now. You know, they have such massive control over everybody and they can get the exact same message to so many people now. So I don't even necessarily think the people have gotten dumber. They're just easier to reach and it's easier to control, because everyone's looking at their phone, everyone's watching the news, everyone's reading the newspaper, whatever. You know, like 200 years ago, it was harder to get everyone on the same page, but now it's so easy. I mean, that's kind of what I think.
I wonder, and like, I'm more of a conspiracy theorist, because I refuse to be a coincidence theorist. And I always think like the higher the stakes, the way less random things become. And most people, when I say that, agree. People that say, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm like, don't you think the higher the stakes, things get less random? They're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, like, and then you can kind of segue into whatever you want to talk to them about after they kind of agree. It's like this whole, it doesn't even matter what the topic is, actually. Think about it. It's like you have it on TV, you have it on the newspaper, you have it on push notifications on your phone from apps that you never asked for it. You know what I mean? Like, we can all think of a couple apps, I'm sure, that like will not stop sending global push notifications about, you know, 12-year-olds are now eligible to receive a shot, even though you know what doesn't accompany that is, according to this, our own CDC that's telling the 12-year-olds they should get it, there's a 0.00, I think maybe even another zero before you actually get to the digit that's significant, percent chance of them dying from COVID. And then if you even go deeper, you're like, oh wait, how are they gaming the statistics that even one person dies from COVID at that age? And it's like, well, again, you know, they could be dying from cancer, but if they had a positive PCR test that they're running 45 cycles, it's going to be recorded the way it's recorded. You know, the whole thing is just lying with statistics, man. Or like they're saying kid hospitalizations are on the increase, but like you can read how they are classifying a hospitalization with COVID, and you could go in with a broken leg, no symptoms at all whatsoever, COVID, catch it in the hospital, and or the more likely scenario, again, 45 cycle PCR test. I mean, if it's above 25 cycles, even, I mean, honestly, I don't think it was ever meant to test for something like this anyways, but that's open for debate. I'm not pretending to be like a scientific expert, but I've definitely done some research. Like they're literally, each cycle of amplification like doubles the likelihood of a false positive, right? Because it doubles the magnification, is my understanding. So Fauci himself has said like anything above 25 doesn't really indicate anything, right? And it can find like dead viral cultures, I think, too. So it could be that you were infected in the past. The whole thing is kind of crazy. And they'll add that to pump up the fear, you know, to serve their agenda.
So do you think COVID is just a front to test, you know, what they can get away with, see how they can manipulate people, see what type of money transfers they can make without people getting upset. Because what's so infuriating to me is the battle always ends up being over COVID instead of the ulterior motives. You know, you have
exactly
the anti-mask people and the pro-mask people arguing about masks while billions and billions of dollars are going to corporations out of your, you know, for money out of your pocket.
Yeah.
That kind of pisses me off more. But do you think that's the goal the whole time, is just like create this thing that they can really test the waters to see what, how dumb are these people? How much will they actually ask for? What can we actually get away with? Is that basically all this has been?
You know, man, like I call this like the grand conspiracy in my head. I don't get to have too many conversations like this with people because like nobody that I know, you know, is really that woke to any of this stuff. But I do spend a lot of time of my own researching and following some of the people that we were talking about before we started recording. I follow like everybody religiously, like I don't miss videos, you know? And yeah. What worries me is we know that like there are black budget programs where infinite fake money, you know, like gets thrown at whatever the purpose is. We know that like DARPA in the past has been shown to be decades, you know what I mean? Like minimum one decade ahead of public knowledge, like minimum one decade, which probably means like two, three even. And like they've made like it's been brought to light the levels of nanotechnology, which then they'll rename like hydrogel and smart dust, things like that. So that if you ever see like a fact check on it, they can just say, this isn't nanotech. But they won't say it's hydrogel. So therefore fact check false, because most people just read a headline, you know? And like, I think like what scares me is like the grand conspiracy is always more control, right? I think we can all agree. It's like, it's maximum level control. And with nanotech, like, there was something from The Last American Vagabond, if you know, familiar with Ryan Christian's content. Like he likes to go down into the nanotech rabbit holes on occasion. And he likes to show a clip of a Google Maker conference from 2014, where an engineer is speaking to nanotech that was available in 2004. And these things are, I mean, I can look up, I have like notes on it, but it's like basically they're extremely small. They can network on or in your body. They run off of power, like that they'll siphon from your body, either from your movement or something like your respiratory, something like that. So they have their own power source, they can network and they can transmit information like outwards. You know what I mean? And they call that like smart dust. And it's so small, and like we could be like the most protective people, eating organic, not taking our mandatory jabs or whatever. And like we could inhale that stuff and, you know, we wouldn't know, you know. And also they are openly studying like self-spreading vaccines. So I mean, in my head, I'm like, I don't know, how safe can we really be? But as far as the grand conspiracy and like they want top-down control, there's also, I forget his name off the top of my head, but there's a guy who is the director of NASA at Langley. He's like in charge. Dennis Bushnell, I think is his name. And he's like, he gave a speech. This is like one of the best videos on YouTube that like nobody knows about. It's got like 200 views. He gave an hour-long speech at this convention where the theme was like how to make $1 trillion, not a billion anymore, trillion, right? And so he's privy to some knowledge that like he kind of knows what the vision of the future is, and he can't say too much. But one of the things he said that really stuck out was they envision for us a global sensor grid, where there's going to be between 1 to 10 trillion sensors deployed, you know, in like our phone, you know, our phones are sensors, right? But he didn't go into like what type of sensors, right? We don't need to know. What it really means is constant 24/7 surveillance, data collection, could be visual, auditory, could be a lot of things. And these sensors can be on the nano scale. And when you start rolling out, like, again, it just needs some transmission medium. So what does that remind you of? I think of 5G, because the faster it is and the more readily available it is, the more real time the data is going to become. And then, am I talking too much, by the way? Did you want to
chime in? No, keep going.
So my like really dystopian vision for the future, which to me is technically feasible, would involve like, and this isn't even, it's not even a stretch. Like there was a DARPA director who was talking about like, you can ingest a pill, but it's not really a pill. The acid in your stomach like activates it so that it has like an electricity source, and it turns your body into an authenticator, you know? So it's like, I don't know the full technical like mechanism, but the way she described it was that This is already FDA approved, if that means anything to anybody anymore, because it means less and less to me. And your body becomes like the authentication mechanism for things like, I'm sure, even though I've never heard anybody say this for real, but like that they envision a future of the internet for us where we have some sort of biometric authentication so that when we log into the internet, there's no more anonymity, right? Because like, why would they want us to be anonymous on the internet? Clearly they'd rather just know who we are. And you can extend that to things like, oh, you want to travel while you're at the airport, biometric authentication. And of course, once what this is really equating to, I mentioned I was a web developer before. Oh, no, I mentioned that earlier.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to like technical things, it's really not even that hard to explain. Like what they want to make, like when we log into Facebook, our identity is not our name. Our identity is a unique identifier. It's just a string of numbers. It's meaningless to us. That's why none of us know what our Facebook ID is, right? But like to Facebook, that ID, if the government has a backdoor into Facebook's database, right? Let's assume they do, because I'd be willing to bet anything they do. If you look into the backstory of Facebook, it's like almost especially obvious, right? The Project LifeLog ended the day that Facebook was incorporated. Like, I mean, and then they can tie that against our Google ID, right? Like our Google Life ID, and tie that to our social security number. And what you get, and someone just, you know, you get one good programmer can write, it doesn't have to be an algorithm, but write something, some semblance of that. And they can basically paint a picture of our life in real time, you know, tie that to our bank and our credit card. And you don't just get a picture of our past, you get a picture of our day to day, you know, and like things like Google, I mean, they're constantly monitoring our location, for instance. And, you know, our SIM card and our phone, it sees what cell towers were pinging. You know what I mean? Like they can get like basically a really accurate picture, but that's not enough because the nanotech exists to get inside of us and get the biometric readings in real time too. So why would they stop? You know what I mean? And then it segue that into the digital currency, the CBDC, central bank digital currency. And it's like, do we need that? Of course not. But why wouldn't that be a vision, a part of their vision for our future, when having that means in real time, they can do things that are not nefarious, but kind of nefarious. Like they can set interest rates per individual. You know, like if you're not saving enough, your interest rates are high and I'm saving too much, my interest rates are low. They can give government handouts instantaneously with a expiration. And like, whenever I'm telling this to people, I don't spend too much time talking about this. I don't want my friends to like hate me, but I like to always remind them that
I'm already at the place that everyone's going to hate me, so I don't have to worry about it anyway. You're in that tough spot.
I remember you said when you started, you were like just sharing everything with your Facebook buddies, and like they're just like, man, get out of my timeline.
Yeah.
I'm not that far in yet, man. I just, I don't know. But I always like to remind people that to execute on what I'm describing, like you don't need a team of like the world's most brilliant engineers. You just need like a couple good engineers. And when I say like, whatever you're envisioning, it's like half that, you know what I mean? You don't even have to be that great at writing code. Like I can speak to this firsthand. You don't need to be that great. You can write algorithms that do this at scale for any number of people, 10, 100, 100,000, 100 million, you know, like that's what should scare everybody, is that it's no longer like us versus them body count. It's that this technology that's, if we don't accept it as a part of our lives, what scares me is that we're going to have to accept it, you know, like either because too many people did and we'll be excluded.
Yeah.
Or for any other way, right? Like you won't be able to shop and get food, you know?
Yeah. You've probably read Brave New World, right?
You know, it's funny. I haven't, but I just bought that last night. So I just bought the book.
It's exactly what you're describing, because, what it is the people will beg for more of this stuff. Like you don't have to force it on them. They'll want more of it, because what you do is while you're taking their rights away, you give them more stimulation basically. So if your Wi-Fi is going to work better, if you're going to be able to stream from anywhere, if your GPS is going to work better, you know, all these completely, well, not useless, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, useless things that are going to become easier to use, they will beg for more of it. And if you don't use it, you become ostracized. That's what happens in Brave New World. Whereas 1984, have you read 1984 by
I saw the movie.
Okay, yeah. So that that is more the idea that the government is going to force everything on you. It seems to be much more realistic that they are making everything appealing. You know, I mean, because if you even go back to like the 50s, everyone was terrified they're going to have a wiretap in their living room or something. But then they just slowly implemented all this technology throughout the decades that people now have Alexa in their living room. I mean, how's that not a wiretap?
Right.
No one thinks about it. Nobody cares. They want it, you know, so that they don't have to go turn the stereo on themselves. They can just say, hey, Alexa, play, you know, whatever. So that's what I see happening, is that they've conditioned the people to want more convenience at the loss of their liberties, I'd say.
Yeah, man. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they, you know what I mean? It's like, do you think Amazon is selling these Alexa devices because they need the money? They don't sell them for very much, and they're always on sale, you know? And like, we know that they're data collecting and they're storing that information. So it's like, I just think over time, like the psychological side of things, they've gotten better and better at understanding. Because let's be honest, how many people are there on this side of the curtain that me and you can see eye to eye on, like about like, hey, this isn't a coincidence. They know what they're doing. Like if I said that to like any of my friends, they'd be like, dude, shut up, man. Like yeah. Alexas are just there for your convenience. I'd be like, okay, man, did you read that most recent update where they like network all the Alexa devices? And like if you have the smart doorbell, they'll like monitor across the street and your neighbor's gonna be pissed because now they're being watched, even though they didn't sign up for that. Like, I don't know. It's just enabling this really horrific potential future that's, and again, like, man, I don't know how much you want to talk about COVID, but it's like, if we're on the same page about what real COVID is, not response to COVID, right? But real COVID, if we're on the same page about that, like, then what is going on here? Are people this, like, are people in like the politicians that are empowered to, you know, or actually, I don't know, should they even be empowered, but like seem to think they're empowered to make decisions that really drastically affect our lives, you know, like shutting down businesses, mandating injections or, you know, whatever, wearing masks that in the furthest back I've seen is 1970. So I've seen at least 40 years of mask studies there. I've never seen a single, I've said, I'll give somebody a Bitcoin. Nobody's ever sent me a single peer reviewed clinical study showing that masks have any effect on things that spread via aerosols. I've never seen a single one. But I've seen the studies that do exist showing that they don't, you know, and showing that the control groups that didn't wear masks didn't get as sick as the mask wearing group. You know, there's that, like.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard you talk about the cabal of like big government, big business and the media that all kind of scratch each other's backs. And, you know, that's an effective system, because if you just have the government or you just have big business or you just have the media pushing these things, it wouldn't be as effective. But if you have all three working together, then you can really create a horrifying narrative, because then you have the constant fear mongering of the media, and then you have the legislation that's coming from the government, and then you have all the advertising and all the incentives from big business to get you to comply. And they all benefit from it because their ratings go up because of the fear, and then the government gains more control, and then the corporations, you know, reap the benefits of the government scratching their backs or, you know, crushing all their competition or whatever. So, I mean, yeah. It's kind of an obvious system, you know?
That's the problem, is it all works together so well. And then the other side of that, you know, is, again, if we're not coincidence theorists, it's like, how did we end up here? And then you kind of remember that BlackRock, Vanguard, and there's a third. I don't remember if it's like, there's a third. I don't remember if it's Blackstone or if it's like SoftBank. It's one of those two, I think. But there's like three corporations that basically control $11 trillion of wealth. And so, and remember, when you say corporations, like to me, what I'm thinking immediately that means is like translation, top-down control structures. Somebody's at the top, and when they speak, the people beneath them act, and they will regurgitate the orders to the people beneath them and people beneath them and people beneath them. And like, it's just how things work, I guess. You just have to kind of make sure that there's some sort of checks and balances to where three people don't control $11 trillion of wealth, because like, they literally have a controlling interest in, or not, I guess maybe not controlling interest might not be the right way to say it, but they have like majority stakes in a large percentage of the S&P 500, which is like the benchmark for how the economy is doing in the United States. And so, like, just think about the control they have. Like, if they want things to crash tomorrow, they can do it for no reason. And then right. they, literally, like, their minions at the news stations, which, by the way, like, four or five companies own pretty much all of the mainstream television programming that we watch, or that we don't watch, actually. But and then they'll make the excuse, oh yeah, that was the COVID crash. It's like, well, dude, we knew about COVID in like January. So why didn't the stock market crash until late February? Did anybody ever wonder? You know what I mean? But if you look at it on charts and stuff like that, it makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, people that want to call it the COVID crash, it's like, nah, not really. We knew about that way ahead of time. You know, it's the people that control the money that control the algorithms now, because it's pretty much all algorithms that trade back and forth. They say when things go down and when they go up and whatnot. And like you said, it couldn't have been better, because you blame it on COVID. And again, response to COVID, not COVID. And it's like, how did they get COVID so wrong? You'll notice it's the same actors. What's this dude's name in Europe at the, I'll think of his name. But there's one guy who gets everything wrong, yet all he has to do, he's at the Imperial College of London. I forget his name. He's always wrong, like by orders of magnitude. You know, he's the guy that said that there was gonna be like 3 or 4 million deaths in America.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, he's still the guy too. Like, it's crazy, because in America, we don't have it nearly as bad as they do, where he'll say, oh, this variant, you know, insert variant name, right? And again, the only reason we even think they're significant is because it's all semantics. It's all the words that they use. They'll say, we are unsure if it's more deadly, you know, like it may be more transmissible, implying there's no data behind that. And half the time when they act like there is data behind it, it's just modeling. And it goes right back up to people like him. What the fuck is his name? Can't think of it. And it's like, his models are always off, but for some reason they're like, that's exactly what the government needs to say, oh, we gotta lock down though, because the model, the experts are really concerned. And then boom, more money printing, which is really just a wealth transfer, because when they print that money, it's helicopter money. And the people that get the checks like have to spend it. And again, yeah. It just filters back up. And it's like, but I don't know, man, like the wealth disparity in America was already so wide that like this wasn't needed. You know what I mean? It wasn't about money. Clearly, no. Like the gap was already so wide that it couldn't have just been about the money. And plus, like, I think if I try to make sense of this in my head, given that I think we can agree like that, again, COVID on paper is what it is. You don't need a person reading a teleprompter to mislead you. COVID bad, COVID bad. Like, no. Look at it on paper. Under 65, if we just go off the data like that the CDC publishes, you're more likely to die from influenza, which again, they game that number too, but whatever. It's about control, and it's about something more, which, I mean, also, you know, COVID certificate, yeah, acronym, certificate of vaccination ID could be, right? And it would make a little bit of sense, because again, once you get the ID is the key. The ID is the key. They don't actually care if you get the jab, unless it is a depopulation agenda, which Georgia Guidestones may say, like, yeah, it is. But let's just say that there isn't mass death. If this helps funnel us, or, you know, like sheep, like herd us into wherever they envision us in the future, associating, like giving us a master ID, like a master ID that supersedes social security numbers, would enable the central bank digital currencies. And again, that is ultimate control. If you control currencies in real time at scale, and it'll be a fluid process, you know, like individualized. That to me means that like you either live on a farm and like you can be self-sufficient, or when they say get your 14th booster of the year, like you get it, you bend over and you take it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about BlackRock, because I haven't heard many people talking about it at all. And they are buying like every available real estate that they can, and they're buying it like 20 to 50% over asking price, so there's no competition, and they're directly funded by the Federal Reserve. So do you want to explain that a little deeper, like how that's taking place, how they got to this point, how they're able to do this?
Yeah, like my understanding of this, because I don't want to imply that like the Federal Reserve is giving them money that they're buying houses with. I don't think that's exactly how it works. It's, again, it's always a little bit more nuanced, right? Because it is basically how it works. But my understanding is more that the Federal Reserve says COVID bad, and then the government's like, relief package here, and allows the Federal Reserve to print more money, right? And then give it to us at interest and all that. But the Federal Reserve gave a lot of the control of the wealth to BlackRock, and then they were buying corporate debt, and like the companies that probably needed it, because maybe I don't know, I don't even want to go down that path, but like they were buying a lot of corporate debt in companies like Apple and Microsoft. You know what I mean? Like they're propping up the like $2 trillion market cap companies, like the people that really don't need it, that are like tech companies too. You know, that like, it's not like an airline where, you know, the airlines got in trouble because they were constantly buying back their own stock so that they didn't have any money for a rainy day. And as soon as they needed it, they're like, we'll just get bailed out. You know, the precedent was set back in 2008, maybe even before that. Like I'm not as much of an expert as I would like to be, but so like basically think of BlackRock. We already mentioned that they've got a massive investment, if not like the controlling interest in a lot of these companies that are in the S&P 500, which is like the 500. I don't know if they're necessarily technically the 500 biggest, but I think they're basically the 500 biggest by market cap in the United States. And so what happens when you give BlackRock, who already has these massive stakes in these companies, all of this fake free money to go buy and prop up these companies even more? Well, that's just another wealth transfer to themselves. You know what I mean? Because their shares go up in value, and then, you know, they can take some of that money, or I'm sure they can get loans or whatever they need. They're probably their own bank. And then, yeah, they were purchasing entire neighborhoods in some cases at like 20% above ask, you know, cause everybody's hearing all these stories like, oh yeah, I sold my house and it was crazy. The bids came in way higher than what I was asking. And it's like, it's either the institutions doing this, or maybe they just started it. And then in order for people to compete, like I have friends that bought houses in this market, they didn't have a choice. Like if they want to live, that's what was required of them, you know, and the low interest rates enticed everybody. I don't know how at BlackRock, I'm assuming probably just pays cash, but I don't know. So anyways, yeah. And what is that set up for? You know, it's the same thing with like Bill Gates being the largest farmland owner in America. Like what is that set up for? It's just us normal people having a greater dependence on the people that control the farmland, you know, or the homes, because you got to live somewhere. And we already know, like you can kind of see it already when with BlackRock, like when one institution has such a controlling like share of something, whether it's housing or some stock, they can kind of do what they want. They can set a new precedent, right? They control, they have too much say basically, and it sets the bar, and then normal people just kind of have to follow suit.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying because a lot of people are thinking that this is a temporary thing we're going through. You know, after COVID goes away, everything's going to resettle and be normal again. They don't realize how much has been done that can't be undone. You know, how much wealth has gone upward, and not just wealth in money terms, but also in assets has just gone.
That's upward. The game, man. That's a good distinction. Sorry to cut you off. It's like, dude, like that is the game, man. Like it's assets. Like when we hear somebody's a billionaire, they don't have $1 billion in the bank. They have $1 billion in assets that appreciate, because what's really happening every time the government says 6 trillion, 4 trillion, whatever, you know, like if Biden can actually read his teleprompter and speak the right word, like X number of trillions, right? Like what they're doing is devaluing the dollar, you know? So, yeah. So the wealthiest people, like they control assets that appreciate relative to the dollar. It's all like, you know what I mean? Like seriously, the best takeaway from this, if anybody's watching, is just like, think of everything as a two-way, not just like, oh, this much in dollars, but like think of it as the stock market crashed. Well, the dollar gained strength relative to those assets. Stock market went up. Okay, the dollar lost strength relative to those assets. And like one of the things I've really deep dove and try to teach myself as much as possible, because I don't just like to go down these rabbit holes because I want to drive myself crazy, but like I want to make money off of it whenever possible. Like Moderna, you know, if you are okay with profiting off of a very clear cut, I don't know what to even call it. Like it was just basically like when Moderna was very cheap and the Operation Warp Speed chatter started, it was very evident that like they were basically hand selected and it was rigged for them to excel, you know, like they developed their COVID vaccine in less than 48 hours. You know what I mean? Like they already had the mRNA technology. So it was basically a guarantee. Like once they got the sequence from China, that was it. Like, it was a guarantee that they were going to be a player in that game. And you can use like stock options or just buy shares even. I mean, they saw almost a 10x multiple, and you can make like a life-changing wealth off of being a conspiracy theorist or whatever you want to call yourself, a truther, I like to say.
Yeah.
And also understanding like some of these financial instruments, you know. Then you get a bunch of free, a bunch of all this fake money, right? Like, I can't even, like, the US dollar has been so devalued recently that it's like a joke, you know, to like even be rich anymore is just kind of silly to me. That's why I said, like you were saying though, buy assets.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of the dollar being devalued, I know a lot of my audience is a huge, are huge fans of Bitcoin. And you're a skeptic. I'm also a skeptic. Do you want to explain what Tether is? I think a lot of people, everyone knows Bitcoin, but not a lot of them know what Tether is. Do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, sure. And I will say, like, I call myself a skeptic is like, it's hard because I believe in cryptocurrencies in the sense that, like, we could make a cryptocurrency, preferably like Monero, a privacy coin that we can actually transact in without anybody knowing like how much we hold and who paid who or for what. That would be like, honestly, like the best version of the future that I can envision, you know, like those privacy coins give us freedom to like literally like let us transact and let financial markets exist without tampering. But, you know, it just, all it requires is honestly widespread adoption. So I believe in crypto. I believe in like the potential it holds. The problem with cryptos like Bitcoin on a feasibility level are just that, like, man, you know, the blockchain analytics companies are pretty good at like figuring out like whose ID is who if they need to, and kind of like, and the only reason they'd really do that to target you, I feel like, is to do something malicious, right? Like, they don't really want to spend time and money figuring out whose Bitcoin ID is that if they're going to do something positive to you. And Tether, man. I bought into Bitcoin ahead of the run up, man, and made some good money in the last, like,
which one? This last one or 27?
Yeah, the last one. I was in like November, early November, and got out at around like 50k a coin. So basically 20k to 50k, and did all right. And then I also had some altcoins and whatnot. But so it's like, as a speculative, but like, I was never confused. Like, in my mind, I was speculating that the price would go up in terms of USD so that I could sell it and get my USD. Now, I was never like under some fake idea that like this was going to become the world reserve currency or anything like that. I'm not trying to hate on anybody that wants to dream. I just like think there's too many people with such a vested interest that are like multi-generational, you know, like that have just way too much of a vested interest to ever let that happen. Even if it makes sense. And so Tether is what props up the value of the cryptocurrency market at large. And Bitcoin obviously is the biggest player in the Bitcoin, in the crypto market. Tether, and I'm not like the world's best Tether expert, but I know that like it's meant to be pegged to the US dollar. So you're meant to be able to redeem one Tether for one US dollar. However, if you actually read the people that are in charge of Tether, I believe the lowest amount that you're allowed to redeem for USD is like 100,000. And they also like don't have, it's like super shady basically, in summary. Like, they don't have like any real banking connections. It's all like super shady banks. They don't have any transparency as far as like what their cash holdings look like. They say that they're holding like commercial papers, but if you actually do the math, they would be like one of the largest like in the world. I think they were like, they'd be top seven. But there's no record of any unknown whale existing that actually holds that much commercial paper. So like, long story short, it's basically it's a virtual guarantee that Tether is not backed one-to-one by USD. It's not even remotely close. And this is why it really matters, because there's $62 billion of Tethers propping up the crypto markets. And that's what really established this bull run. Like, if you pulled up CoinMarketCap, and you went to Tether, which I think is like number three or four in terms of like size, which is not good. And you can't look at the chart because it'll just be a straight line. You have to go to market cap. And that's where you get the Tether chart going in a hockey stick. And what that really indicates is new Tethers being minted. And oftentimes there's a strong correlation with like Bitcoin price going down, Tether in existence, like new Tether being minted, basically. And if you think about it, it kind of works because like it'll backstop Bitcoin dropping. And if you mint like a billion Tether and you buy it straight into Bitcoin and Bitcoin goes up, if it goes up enough, basically you can sell half, get the cash you need to back the Tethers. Maybe that's what they were thinking. Maybe not. I don't know. But like, it's kind of like to me, it's like, it should be able to be explained simply. Like, I think that maybe Tether's like up to 5% backed by cash. Let's just say double that, 10%. Why not? Let's just say 10%. At some point, that's going to matter, you know, because everybody thinks that their crypto ecosystem is what is it now? Like 1.7 trillion or something like that. Like if you take 62 trillion or sorry, billion Tether and you actually prop up, you actually spend it, it equates to much more than 62 billion in terms of market cap. So it's like very misleading, you know, like we think that like, it's like if you hold 100 Bitcoin and you look at the current price, or let's just say 100,000 even, 100,000 Bitcoin, you look at the current price and you're like, okay, I have 100,000 times that price. But in reality, if you tried to sell, you would bring down the price of Bitcoin, you know? But if you just look at market cap, it's misleading, right? And the market cap is like extra bubbly because these fake Tethers backed by nothing have not only created 62 billion, but then also do the market cap magic, and it looks much, much, much bigger than it actually is. And at some point, if enough people try to exchange to fiat currency, you know, like change Tether to, and Tether, by the way, Tether stopped printing. So this is why everybody that's watching, if you're still watching, thank you. But like Tether stopped printing over a month ago. That's a huge red flag in my book. Cause, and what happened was the USDC, USD coin kind of like started printing more in their place almost, you know, perfect timing. But like USDC, I'm pretty sure is affiliated with Coinbase, which is publicly traded. So I don't think they can get away with too much magic money manipulation. So it's like, I'm not trying to tell anybody that the game's going to come to a close soon, but if Tether's not printing, there's been a lot of like regulatory attention on them. Like the New York Attorney General did a deep dive and fined them and banned, I think, a lot of crypto transactions in New York as a result, because they saw the damage that Tether was going to do. And then Jim Cramer was, maybe not publicly, I don't watch mainstream cable, even like CNBC or whatever, but he was on Twitter doing a lot of research. And the big named Bitcoin pundits were kind of like, Tether's fine, don't ask, you know, like, let's not talk about it. But it's like, you don't have to be a genius to know that like, if enough people, it's just like bank runs, man. It's just like bank runs. Like that's basically what preceded the Federal Reserve being created, which I think, honestly, if you needed like to say who's behind the grand conspiracy of ultimate control, it's probably the banking families that were like that whole lineage that was involved with establishing the Federal Reserve Act, which was actually a bunch of bankers that met up on Jekyll Island and front ran the lawmakers that were going to do it. They just said, hey, we'll do it. Yeah. And they used propaganda to make it seem like the act that they drafted, that they hated it. You know, the bankers themselves that wrote it ran propaganda that made it seem like they hated it.
Yeah.
So that the politicians could sign it into law, who knows if they even read it, and appease the normal people that got burned by bank runs because they thought the money that they put in the bank was actually there, but it was like 7%. So this is basically just like, let's just say Tether 7%, same shit, just using crypto now, 100 years later. I could be wrong, but like, I don't know, man. It typically, if it makes a lot of sense, it's not too far from the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, so the problem with Bitcoin at this point is that it's not different enough from a fiat currency that it's going to be stable. It's following the same basic traits through Tether, right? I mean, that's to sum it up.
Yeah, I mean, it just, we shouldn't value Bitcoin in my mind in terms of USD. That's like the best way I can put it. I think it should be valued in USDT. And people be like, what's that? It's like, well, look into Tether. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good info out there on Tether. And the likelihood that it's backed one-to-one is 0% in my mind. Like not even 0.0001, you know, not even a chance of a 12-year-old's yeah. chance of dying from COVID, which is like 0.0000000.
Yeah.
Like, give him the jab though, you know?
Yeah. So what do you think people should do? How do we change the mindset? You know, just you and me talking like this, or is there anything people can do on a larger level that you think would disrupt anything, or are we just screwed? Is this just inevitable? We're headed down this path. There's no way to stop. Just with everything, you know, like not just Bitcoin. Back to like the the original part of the conversation, just, you know, how the more control, the more centralized everything is it just inevitable? That's what we're going to do to ourselves no matter what.
I wonder, man, your guess is as good as mine. Like the one thing that Sam Tripoli says a lot that resonates a lot with me is that nobody's going to save you. You know, like we got to really empower ourselves mentally, physically, monetarily. Why not? You know, like that's why I don't want to be like anti-crypto, because you can still make money with crypto. It's just like, don't be caught holding the bag, because the tethers will be sold off at like 10 cents per tether instead of $1 per tether, which is what we think of them as, which then props up the value of all these crypto assets, right? It's not that like crypto isn't awesome. Like a lot of these projects are really viable and do awesome stuff, but it's just like, we got to get it right in our heads that like they're propped up by stable coins more than USD. So, and yeah. And as far as like what we can do, like, yeah, like there's no right or wrong answer. I just personally, I like the idea of having like a bug out plan. There's good resources on like how you can get a second citizenship in case that becomes something that you need. I hope it's never something that any of us need, but like, I don't see any downside in having it if you can afford to do it. There's options that are like not as expensive. Like if you go to Macro Aggressions podcast with Charlie Robinson, it's like one of my favorites to listen to. He did an episode not too long ago about with basically a company that like basically can hook Americans up with second citizenship, and it's going to be in the range of like I think 5 to 30,000 on average. That to me is like worst case scenario. If you're gonna, you know, be still stay in your house and be around your family and loved ones and all that, I think like honestly the idea of like, we don't want this podcast to go on for like 2 hours, but you know, they're doing Cyber Polygon in 2 days, which is like a big it's like a staging for a big cyber threat that they're calling like a cyber pandemic. And it's a simulation. That's the word I was thinking of. And like anybody who's familiar with Crimson Contagion, Event 201, SPARS, and what was the other one? There's like Clad X or something. Like all of those simulations that preceded COVID ended up being almost spot on with what actually happened. And then when you see a lot of like similar level groups, like World Economic Forum especially being a common thread between those simulations and these simulations, simulating things like our infrastructure, like power going down, banking, and obviously like they ran a simulation, not maybe not World Economic Forum, but there was one that I heard about. I think the Ice Age Farmer covered it maybe like 8 months ago, where they were simulating basically how to do a massive disruption to food distribution in the US. And because there's one company, I forget the name, there's one company that has like massive refrigerated warehouses dispersed around the United States. And all it really takes is like them losing power for like a day even to cause massive disruptions to manifest at our local grocery stores. So, you know, just, you know, see if you can grow your own food, or at least like educate yourself, buy a book that teaches you some stuff if you need to know it. Some stuff like that, man, comes to mind. I'd love to hear your take, by the way, Reed.
Yeah, man, I don't know. I do think it's inevitable. My dad is an English teacher, and he teaches lots of, you know, he does a lot of reading for his classes. And so the Orwell and Huxley was kind of driven into me from a young age. And he always told me that this is inevitable. People are going to choose this because it makes sense. You know, liberty doesn't make sense, you know, even though it's good. It's not a logical thing. Logic will bring us to maximum control, maximum accessibility, maximum assistability, you know, whatever it is. We'll never think about, am I free? It's always, how fast can this product get to me? Or how fast can, you know, my wound heal? Or how fast can I connect to the internet? That's all we actually care about. So it's inevitable. I'm invested in precious metals, and I have guns, and I kind of know how to take care of myself. So that's all I've got going for me. I don't really know how to prepare for what's coming, because I don't know what's coming. You know, like you said, yeah. I mean, we don't know how it's all going to play out. What do you think about precious metals, by the way? I did want to ask about that before we end.
Yeah. I mean, I was super like into researching COVID as of like last January. And so there were a lot of unknowns then, right? So like I was a lot more worried. And so one of the things I did, well, got another gun, got a safe that can't be moved. Basically, like you kind of like have to, you know, have a team to, so basically I don't have to worry about something picking up my safe. And yeah, got a safe and then started collecting precious metals as well, man. As far as like the problem with precious metals is like, you can't think of them in terms of USD. You have to think of them in terms of precious metals, because you'll drive yourself crazy trying to worry about like physical bullion. And by the way, when we say precious metals, guys, like physical bullion, not
certificates.
Not ETFs. Because that's what they do to manipulate the again, perceived prices of, because again, it's like Google
silver, right? The silver market. Yeah.
Google like the price of these things via ETFs and then go try to buy it. Like actually go and buy the bullion. You won't get it for the paper trade price. You'll get it at a high markup, like more than just a premium markup. Like, so yeah, I'm 100% like that. You should own some, like as far as allocation, it's hard for me to think more than like 5 to 10%, just in the like thoughts of that the manipulation sucks. So you're gonna think you're losing money. So there's that. But it's like, you know, if shit hits the fan, you're taken care of to an extent. Like I've got enough where I feel comfortable, but I still do have that itch in the back of my mind, like buy more. You know, I run my passive income business that I talk about on my YouTube channel, and it's like it generates money that then sits in a bank, and it's like, oh, in 2 days they're doing cyber polygon simulation where the banks go down. Like that money in the bank is just a number in a database. It's not real. So it's like, I'm in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I should get some more bullion, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, hey, thanks for coming on. We're coming up on an hour here. I'll just, I'll let you give your plugs where people can follow you. I think I got your Twitter and your YouTube linked in the description, but if you got another website or anywhere else you want people to keep up with what you're doing, just let us know.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, man. If you just want to drop the links to my Twitter. And I mean, really, I'm the most interesting content. If you guys, by the way, thank you for everybody that watched till the end. If you guys like what I had to say, I do have like a second YouTube channel called Ryan Hoag Investing that will be linked in the description. I have a little bit more freedom to speak there because it's got a smaller following. And I think it ties in more with like the finances inevitably tie into the more conspiratorial truth community stuff. And if anybody's interested, like I also am like a teacher as like a job. I've been teaching at the college level for 7 years now. And I opened my own online school where I can kind of teach you how to start your own e-commerce business if you're interested. The only promise I make is I will show you exactly how I do it. And I'm a like multi-million dollar Amazon seller. So it's like a little accolade that sounds cool, but it really is not that big of a deal. I've just been at it for 4 years. So I can help you guys if you ever wanted to learn from somebody, you had that itch to do it and you just needed a step-by-step tutorial. You can learn at ryansmethod.com and Reed, I'll set you up with a affiliate link too in case anybody joins, you'll get kickback. So,
all right. Hey, man, I really appreciate you coming on. I'd like to have you on again in the future. I think our conversation had a good flow and lots of interesting information. But thanks, everyone, for watching. I will be streaming tomorrow night, I think at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So stay tuned for that. Ryan, thank you very much.